Now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, January 19th, 2017. I want to remind you to have a pencil and paper handy just in case you might want to write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, anything that might help you take action later, because that's what this show is all about, information to act on. Let's start off with announcements. We'll go with the good ones first. Keep California's rivers clean and clear of mining. State officials are considering opening up California's rivers to a reckless form of river mining known as suction dredging. It really does suck. We need your help in urging the state to permanently outlaw this dangerous and polluting hobby. In 2009, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger enacted a moratorium on the practice, and 3 years later, Governor Jerry Brown affirmed it, and it's time to end this destructive hobby for good. Suction dredging, which mines for gold using machines that suck up gravel and sand from river bottoms, can turn a pristine mountain stream into a murky ditch that's unfit for people or fish. It also pollutes rivers by stirring up toxic mercury left over from the gold mining days of 49. Suction dredge mining is a net loss for California. For a few flecks of gold, it destroys our water quality, harms endangered wildlife like coho salmon and red-legged frogs, and turns peaceful waterways into noisy mining sites. So we urge you to urge the State Water Resources Control Board to ban suction dredging and protect wildlife habitat, water supplies, and quiet river recreation. And you can find an action alert at biologicaldiversity.org. That's the website for the Center for Biological Diversity. Once again, www.biologicaldiversity.org. Do it soon. And get involved with monitoring Sinbad Creek in Sinole, California. The Alameda Creek Alliance is hosting a community meeting in Sinole to discuss upcoming creek monitoring efforts on Sinbad Creek. Join us on Wednesday. That's next Wednesday, January 25th, in the cafeteria of the Sinole Glen School, 11601 Main Street in Sinole, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. to learn how you can participate in these efforts. Our goal is to collect baseline information on Sinbad Creek and to see how it is changing over time. We'll discuss plans to map Sinbad Creek, monitor macroinvertebrates known as bugs that live in the creek, monitor water temperature and flow, measure bacteria, and address concerns with invasive plants. All of this takes place on Sinbad Creek out of Sinole. We need volunteers for these efforts, and join us on January 25th at the Sinole Glen School, 11601 Main Street in Sinole, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. to add your voice to the discussion and learn how you can get involved. And they also want you to watch for fish in Alameda Creek. With the recent winter storm, stream flow in Alameda Creek is high enough for steelhead trout to try and migrate upstream through the flood control channel in lower Alameda Creek. Please keep an eye out at the Bart Weir in Fremont and other portions of the flood control channel for steelhead returning with the winter storms. Adult steelhead have typically been seen in the lower creek from January through early March trying to ascend the Bart Weir after a major storm on the declining end of the hydrograph. This typically when the stream flow is down to 200 to 400 cubic feet per second. You can check the current Alameda Creek stream flow on the web in Lower Niles Canyon and in the flood control channel in Union City. See our webpage on what to do if you spot fish in the creek. And the next Alameda Creek Restoration Day is coming up this Saturday. Volunteer with the Alameda Creek Alliance for a morning of habitat restoration along Alameda Creek on Saturday, January 21st from 10 a.m. to noon. At the Niles Staging Area in Fremont, meet them at 10 a.m. at the Niles Staging Area parking lot along Old Canyon Road near Canyon Oaks Court in the Niles area of Fremont. The address, roughly, is 720 Old Canyon Road and will work until noon. We'll be clearing invasive plants, planting native shrubs and plants, and doing some general cleaning around our adopted restoration site. This work continues past work by ACA volunteers, and your efforts will enhance habitat for fish and wildlife along Alameda Creek for years to come. So please wear long pants and sturdy closed-toed shoes that can get dirty. Please no sandals or flip-flops. We do provide gloves and tools. The work isn't on much of a slope, but the ground can be uneven. It's likely to be wet. It's likely to be really wet, so wear clothes that can get dirty and maybe a raincoat. There is no poison oak in the immediate area. But expect cool weather and morning dew when we start. Heavy rain cancels, and it might just rain heavily. You do need to have signed waiver forms, one for the Alameda Creek Alliance and one for Alameda County. And anyone under 18 needs a parental signature. Please go to www.alamedacreek.org to find out about volunteering for this or any other Alameda Creek Alliance action. Once again, that's alamedacreek.org. And coming up in early February is the Earth First Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous, taking place from February 7th through the 14th. The Hudson Valley Earth First Group will be hosting the 2017 Organizers Conference and Winter Rendezvous. Get ready for some awesome workshops, winter hikes, maybe skiing, music, campfires, and lots of fun. Smiley face. We are raising money to host 75 or more people for a weekend-long gathering of Earth Firsters, eco-defenders, and Earth-loving rebels. Nestled in the Catskill Mountains within the Hudson River watershed, we have reserved heated cabins. You better believe they better be heated to engage in important movement discussions and provide a space to plug into existing campaigns and projects in our bioregion. Whatever happened to those Earth First Organizers conferences down in the desert where it's warm? Anyway, they're going to need money, so go to fundly.com/Hudson-Valley-Earth-First-Action-Fund to contribute. Once again, that's Fundly, fundly.com/Hudson-Valley-Earth-First-Action-Fund. And have fun out there in the Hudson Valley, February 7th to 14th at the Earth First Winter Rendezvous. And coming up February 14th to the 20th, mark your calendars for the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action. Planning events in southwest Montana towns, and there will be a national event for everyone, everywhere to take part in. We welcome your ideas, and we need your energy and participation. Here's a tentative schedule. More details will be announced. I didn't see any. Tuesday, February 14th, there will be a rally in Bozeman. Wednesday, the 15th, a March in Candlelight Village Vigil in Gardner. Thursday, February 16th, is the National Call-In Day across the nation. And activities at the Buffalo Field Campaign Headquarters. We will be hosting trainings in nonviolence and Know Your Rights, and that takes place in West Yellowstone. Friday the 17th, a special event in Helena, Montana, the 18th and 19th, Saturday and Sunday, rallies in West Yellowstone, Montana, and storytelling, sharing, and other activities at the Buffalo Field Campaign. And Monday, February 20th, there'll be a rally in Big Sky, Montana. Please join us for any or all of these events. Tell your friends and bring them with you. If you are able to come for a full week and like to stay with the Buffalo Field Campaign, I would recommend that. Please RSVP to Stephanie, her email address, media@buffalofieldcampaign.org, or McKenzie, volunteer@buffalofieldcampaign.org, so we can make accommodations for sleeping spaces and food. Please bring your own bedding. And for more details and exact times, please visit the events calendar at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And do remember, the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. Once again, that webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. And now for the bad news. We got four bummer stories. A Guatemalan activist has been killed protesting a hydroelectric project in this story from Telesur, found on the Earth First Newswire. An activist was killed Tuesday in Guatemala during a clash between protesters and police at a demonstration led by the indigenous community members who opposed the construction of a hydroelectric plant at San Mateo Ixtaltan, a municipality in the country's western highlands. During a peaceful manifestation against the Pojom hydroelectric plant, 72-year-old Sebastian Alonso from Yulchen was fatally wounded by gunshots. According to activists in the area, armed paramilitary groups serving the company or state security forces opened fire on demonstrators and injured protesters. Police said that criminal groups infiltrated the protest and burned down heavy machinery owned by the company running the hydroelectric plant project. Guatemala's Popular and Social Assembly, or ASP, condemned the attack against Chug and Guanchope indigenous groups in Ixquises in the western state of Huehuetenango. And in Mexico, an anti-logging activist Isidro Baldenegro has been killed in this story from BBC News. A prominent Mexican environmentalist has been shot dead in his home in the state of Chihuahua after receiving death threats. Isidro Baldenegro had spent many years organizing peaceful protests against illegal logging in the Sierra Madre Mountains. In 2005, he won the prestigious Goldman Environmental Prize. The UK-based watchdog Global Witness says 33 activists were killed in Mexico in the 5 years up to 2015. Isidro Baldenegro is a community leader for Mexico's indigenous Tarahumara people and one of the country's most prominent environmental activists. He had recently returned to his home village after receiving death threats against himself and his family. Mr. Baldenegro was the second recipient of the Goldman Prize given to grassroots activists to be murdered in less than a year. Honduran campaigner Berta Cáceres, who won the prize in 2015 for her battle against the construction of a dam that threatened to displace indigenous communities, was killed in March of 2016. The Western Sierra Madre Mountains are one of the world's most biodiverse ecosystems and include four canyons, each bigger than the Grand Canyon. They are the ancestral lands of the Tarahumara people. These forests have been targeted by illegal loggers, helped by corrupt officials and landowners, forcing the Tarahumara to progressively smaller and more isolated areas. As a young boy, Isidro Baldenegro witnessed the murder of his father as he took a stand against logging. In 1993, he founded the grassroots NGO to fight deforestation, which attracted national attention. In 2002, he organized a series of blockades and marches which forced the government to temporarily suspend logging, and a year later was imprisoned for 15 months on charges of weapons and drug possession, probably trumped-up charges. Human rights activists say his detention was fabricated by a network of state officials, landowners, and criminal bosses involved in logging. It triggered widespread international condemnation, and he was released in 2004. Isidro Baldenegro, killed in Mexico. And news from Russia, Alexei Yablokov, a Russian activist, has died at the age of 83 in this story by Charles Diggs of the Bologna Wetlands Land Trust. Alexei Yablokov, a towering grandfather of Russian ecology who worked with Bologna to unmask Cold War nuclear dumping practices in the Arctic, has died in Moscow after a long illness. He was 83. As a member of the Russian Academy of Sciences, he was also the lead author of the seminal 2007 book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe for People and the Environment. The book presented the conclusion that the 1986 Chernobyl disaster was responsible for 985,000 premature deaths, the boldest mortality tally to date, by analyzing 6,000 source materials on the accident. Bologna President Frederick Hogg Tuesday remembered Yablokov as a friend of three decades standing. He was an inspiration, a kind friend, and a great scientist, and one of the world's most significant environmental heroes, said Hogg. To know him and to work with him, someone of such cool and keen intellect, is a memory we shall all take care of and treasure. Yablokov commanded a broad environmental and political mandate in Russia and published over 500 papers on biology, ecology, natural conservation, and numerous textbooks on each of these subjects. He founded Russia's branch of Greenpeace and was a leader of the Green Russia fraction of the Yablokov opposition party. While serving as environmental advisor to President Boris Yeltsin from 1989 to 1992, Yablokov published a searing white paper that detailed the gravity of the radiological threat posed by dumping of military reactors and scuttling of nuclear submarines in the Arctic. The catalog of waste dumped at sea by the Soviet contains some 17,000 containers of radioactive waste, 19 ships containing radioactive waste, 14 nuclear reactors, including 5 that still contain spent nuclear fuel, 735 other pieces of radioactivity-contaminated heavy machinery, and the K-27 nuclear submarine with its 2 reactors still loaded with nuclear fuel. Yablokov's white paper spearheaded an epoch of environmental openness that led to more than $3 billion of international aid to Russia to clean up 200 decommissioned submarines and to secure decades of military nuclear waste. The paper's findings dovetail with an early Bologna report in 1992 on radioactive waste dumped by the Russian Navy in the Kara Sea. Hogg said that Yablokov was the first person in a position of power in Russia who was brave enough to step forward and support our conclusions. He helped open serious discussion about what was a Chernobyl in slow motion. The partnership became critical in 1995. Bologna's Alexander Nikitin was charged with treason for his contribution to a report expanding on Bologna's conclusions about nuclear dangers in the Arctic. The report was called the Russian Northern Fleet's Source of Radioactive Contamination. Through the endless hearings leading up to Nikitin's eventual acquittal, Hogg said Yablokov's calm, collected knowledge of Russian constitution helped guide the defense. His coolness during the Nikitin case was remarkable, said Hogg. He really emphasized that the Constitution was the way to Nikitin's acquittal. In 2000, Russia's Supreme Court agreed and acquitted Nikitin on all counts, making him the first person to ever fight a treason charge in Russia and win. Yablokov was a constant luminary at the Bayona presentations in Russia, the European Union, the United States, and Norway, most recently presenting his 2007 book in Oslo at the 30th anniversary of the Chernobyl disaster. He was a tireless defender of environmental activists in Russia, suggesting at a 2014 Bologna conference in St. Petersburg that the ecological group should publish a list of those government officials who harass them. We must constantly support our comrades who have been forced to leave the country or who have ended up in jail on account of their environmental activism, he told the conference. That same year, Yablokov championed the presentation of a report on environmental violations that took place in Russia's showcase Winter Olympics in Sochi. Yablokov's death was mourned across the spectrum in Moscow. Igor Chestin, head of the World Wildlife Fund, called Yablokov's Russians environmental night. Alexei Yablokov dead at 83. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. In the midst of losing close to 300 wild buffalo to Yellowstone's trap and boundary line hunting, this a profoundly tragic event has set upon our buffalo family. Our dear brother Anthony Tony Burkholz has left this world at age 31. His death was sudden and unexpected, hitting us like a heavy punch to the gut. Our sunken hearts are swimming through shock and disbelief. Once we are able to gather our composure through the tears, we'll offer a righteous tribute to this most amazing, inspiring, and deeply loved human being. Tony was a true believer in and contributor to the work of the Buffalo Field Campaign. He was also there for and with us, either in person or just a phone call away. For nearly a decade, working most closely with Mike Meese and Stephanie Shea, he helped and inspired us in more ways than we can count as an advisor, artist, videographer, and so much more. Tony held those he loved close, and he left this world with buffalo fur in both hands. He would never want us to lose focus on our work and our deep grief for his passing, so we press on in celebration of his life and our collective love for the buffalo and all who are wild and free. We know he will be helping us now from the other side. There is a beautiful write-up at GoFundMe from one of Tony's closest friends, which also aims to raise funds to help with his memorial. And true to Tony's generous heart, any remaining money will benefit the Buffalo Field Campaign. Close to 300 wild buffalo have been eliminated from the country's last continuously wild population. Gardner patrols report at least 138 buffalo in Yellowstone's Stevens Creek trap, and hunters have killed more than 150 buffalo along Yellowstone's north and western boundaries. The buffalo migrating across the northern boundary are bearing the brunt of the kill, as hundreds more buffalo tend to migrate to these much lower elevation lands during the winter, where if they aren't killed by hunters along the park boundary, are threatened with being captured inside of Yellowstone's trap. At least on the west side in the Hebgen Basin, while not immune to being killed by hunters, buffalo have half a chance, as the deep snows can make accessing buffalo difficult for hunters, and there are private lands where buffalo are welcome and safe. If they do return to Yellowstone, there is no trap awaiting them on the western boundary. Many days are extremely difficult for patrols as we witness and document buffalo being gunned down when they step across Yellowstone's boundary or being lured into a trap where they are destined for slaughter for the sole purpose of appeasing Montana's cattle industry. Capturing buffalo can also increase hunting pressure as hunters feel they are once in a race against the trap and in competition with each other. This often results in buffalo being hazed back into Yellowstone by hunters' rifles, and it is very rare that the buffalo were able to make it through this gauntlet to the other areas of the Gardner Basin habitat. Our presence and documentation are making a difference here as we are able to demonstrate the deadly ping-pong game buffalo are victims of in this very crowded landscape. As a result, there have been very few significant hunting closures put in place, and we are helping to force the conversations that will allow many more buffalo on a much larger landscape. Tribal hunters in particular are growing increasingly opposed to Yellowstone's capture operations as well as the canned hunting in which they are forced to participate. So these conversations are starting to grow some meaningful teeth that will benefit wild buffalo on the land. Sometimes the small areas available for hunting entice other hunters to attempt to get away with illegal acts. This is another extremely critical reason for our field presence. When hunters know we are watching, they are very careful. Earlier this week, a state hunter was not so careful, and the Buffalo Field campaign was on it. He was looking to kill a buffalo in a group that was on land that is closed to hunting, and when he was approached by patrols, he wanted to argue that he was in the right. With video camera in hand, coupled with our knowledge of the land and the laws, patrols were ultimately able to thwart that kill and save a buffalo's life. And for more information about wild buffalo, go to www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. They are the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And from Germany, we get word of arson and sabotage at the Hambach Open Cast Mine on New Year's Eve in this story from 325, as found on the Earth First Newswire. This New Year's night, while everybody was celebrating, we had a special party of our own visiting the Hambach Open Cast Mine and putting a nice fireworks display for RWE and breaking some glass for a lucky new year. After wandering along the railroad tracks which transport brown coal from the mine to nearby power stations, we came across two signal boxes and a bundle of cables and thought these were perfectly suitable for targets for our mischievous intentions. We opened the boxes with a wide chisel and placed inside 10-centimeter lengths of inner tube stuffed with gasoline-soaked cloths. Then we smeared the inside of the boxes with burning gel, I suspect that's like Sterno, to make sure it all burnt properly. We thought the party was over, but then on the way back, we noticed some welcoming lights from an office trailer in a fenced compound. Next to the trailer were two parked diggers in dire need of maintenance, so we checked the trailer was empty by smashing its windows, then cut the fence instead about immediately improving the air conditioning of the diggers, smashing their windows, cutting all of the hydraulic hoses, and adding some extra holes to the radiators. We also poured some dirt and broken glass in the gas tanks and used a bolt cutter to cut the valves off the trailer's tires. 200 meters further, we found a front-end loader and gave it the same treatment, as well as emptying the fire extinguisher found inside the cab into its gas tank. According to media reports, all of this caused damage of tens of thousands of euros, making it our most expensive New Year's party so far. We wish to send our thanks to all the people who provided us with perfect sound cover by wasting huge amounts of explosives, terrifying the local wildlife, and the stupid capitalist ritual. Signed, Criminal Mechanics Party. In Alberta, Canada, unknown individuals have used heavy machinery to rip out a section of oil field pipeline, causing $500,000 to $700,000 of damage, in this story by Claire Thibault of the province in the North First Newswire. Beaver Lodge Royal Canadian Mounted Police officials believe vandals used a piece of heavy equipment to rip out a section of oil field pipeline out of the ground north of Hythe, Alberta. On Sunday morning, Beaver Lodge RCMP were called to a complaint of vandalism at an oil field site as they believed a piece of construction equipment was used to dig up some of the pipeline, which caused severe damage to it, a Prairie Grand RCMP Constable Michelle Mosier said. The pipeline was still under construction and nothing was spilled, while Mosier said that this was the first instance of vandalism on this scale in an oil field in the area. She has seen in her career the area is no stranger to violent environmental activism. There were hundreds of acts of vandalism against the natural gas industry through the 1980s and 90s in northwest Alberta, many against AEC West, a company operating wells near Trickle Creek. The vandals caused anywhere between $500,000 and $700,000 in damage to the pipeline, Mosher said. And here's the Operation Nemesis campaign update from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. In the 48 hours following Sea Shepherd's discovery of a Japanese whaling vessel poaching in the Australian Whale Sanctuary, images of the harpooned minke whale on its deck have gone viral, generating international outrage, as well as criticism from the Australian government. Photographs and video footage Taken from a helicopter of Sea Shepherd's MV Steve Irwin, show the crew of the Nisshin Maru factory ship hastily concealing the slaughtered whale with a tarp while the crew of the nearby Yushin Maru scrambled to cover their harpoon guns. But the damage was already done. Once again, Sea Shepherd has caught the Japanese whale poachers with blood on their hands, said Sea Shepherd Global Director Captain Alex Cornelison. The images immediately went viral on Twitter and Facebook, reaching over 4.5 million views by Tuesday morning, and had been picked up by all major press outlets in the United States, Europe, Asia, and Australia, and New Zealand. Forced to address the issue just days after hosting Japan's Prime Minister, the Australian Environment Minister, Josh Frydenberg, condemned the whalers in a statement on Monday. The Australian government is deeply disappointed that Japan has decided to return to the Southern Ocean this summer to undertake so-called scientific whaling. It is not necessary to kill whales in order to study them, he added. New Zealand will be expressing its significant disappointment about what is going on there, echoed New Zealand's Prime Minister Bill English, promising to support Australia's fight to stop Japanese whaling through appropriate channels. Frankly, simply being disappointed does not cut it when the majority of Australians want action to stop the Japanese whale-killing fleet, said Sea Shepherd Australia Director Jeff Hansen in response to the politician's comments. While keeping the Japanese poachers on the run, MV Steve Irwin Captain Wyanda Lublink radioed the Yushin Maru No. 2 harpoon ship. We have caught you whaling illegally in a protected whale sanctuary in Australian waters. You are in contempt of the Australian Federal Court and the International Court of Justice, and we demand you stop your operations. Receiving no reply, she further informed the poaching vessel that Sea Shepherd had video footage of them with the whale. We will take this evidence back to Australia, where there can be an investigation. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you can listen in tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. That's Friday at 3 for a rebroadcast. Or you can tune in WNMB, that's MNB, 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning. KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. WLSA LSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. Or Berkeley Liberation Radio plays the Earth First Update sometimes. You never know when, so you got to listen to Berkeley Free Radio. Berkeley Liberation Radio, that's 104.1 FM. Or you could go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number for all debt. all.net, where you can listen online or download this program anytime. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio. It's produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.